House Committee on Information Management and Technology will convene this meeting. Our first order of business is a public hearing on House Bill 3464. And that meeting is now open.
I think we have some testimony.
That was clumsy. Just straighten me out here. And we'll call Brad Swank. Brad?
Chair Dowling, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm Special Counsel for Government Relations for the Oregon Judicial Department, and I'm actually here on a very specific single issue in relation to House Bill 3464. It sort of requires me to take you on a short trip through the statute and a little history. If you look through at the bill in Section 1 of the bill, Subsection 1 says, the Department of Transportation, upon request or as required by law, shall disclose personal information from a motor vehicle record to a government agency for use in carrying out its governmental functions. If you look at then the second section of the bill, 802.181 is amended to say that, except as otherwise provided in subsections 2 to 5 of the section, a person or government agency that is authorized by 802.179, the statute I just quoted, to receive personal information from motor vehicle records may sell or redisclose the information only to a person or government agency authorized to receive the information under ORS 802.179, and only if the person or government agency is authorized by the Department of Transportation to receive the resold or redisclosed information. These lines are important because the Oregon Judicial Department, the courts, the circuit and trial courts of this state, receive lists from the DMV and from along with the Secretary of State, from which we compile our jury lists. These are the jury lists that we select jurors from. And those lists are made confidential by statute, and that's ORS 810.215. The concern is that a recent case from the Court of Appeals, the Jury Service Resource Center, David Shannon and Paul Langley versus the Chief Justice, the State Court Administrator, the Office of the Court Administrator in Marion County, in Multnomah County, and Lincoln County, case that came out in April, held that under the U.S. Constitution, the statute that makes the personal information of jurors confidential in our hands may be unconstitutional. So the chain here is that DMV has information that they give to us that was supposed to be kept confidential by statute. We aren't. If this change is made, it raises the change proposed in 3464. It raises in our minds an ambiguity about our ability to redisclose that information to people who don't have the permission of ODOT to get that information, who aren't on this list. While normally we wouldn't want to disclose that information, we may have no choice because of a court decision that says that the information may be public record. So if that in any way is interpreted to give ODOT the ability to refuse to give us the information in order not to, or to prevent a redisclosure of the information, we're in real trouble. Because the reason that we get that information, and this is the other shoe, the other part of the story, is in the 1980s, there were a lot of court challenge. Many courts only got information that was used to select jurors from the election officials. And we did that too. But there were a number of challenges statewide or nationwide that were being raised against that selection process because it was seen as providing an insufficiently broad sampling of the population in our jury lists. And some of those cases were having some success. So in order to prevent that, in the mid-80s, the Judicial Department came to the legislature, expanded its ability to get a sampling of the population from the Secretary of State to include the DMV lists. That way we figured almost everybody gets a driver license at some point. That way we figured we'd have a broad enough sampling to withstand challenges against our jury selection system for not producing a broad enough sampling of the population. So we fear that if we lose access, if this is interpreted to allow DMV to limit our access so there's no redisclosure to these attorneys who are looking for this information. If that's interpreted in some way to limit our ability to access that information to create jury lists, because we might have to give it away under the court decision through no voluntary choice of our own, we could end up having a situation where inadvertently the entire criminal justice system of this state could be brought to a standstill because we couldn't set up juries that came from a broad sampling in the jury pool. Now, I know that sounds complicated, and it's only because it is complicated. And it's an issue we were talking. We got the opinion in April from the Court of Appeals, and we're trying to decide what to do because it's an issue where somebody sued us in our own court, and our court ruled against us, and now we're trying to decide how to pursue it. It's at an intermediate level appellate court, so we have some options, but it may say that we have to give that information up depending upon how we pursue it. So I can answer questions. My suggestion, and I hate to just present a legal dilemma like this and say that we got a problem, and the problem is we want to make clear in this bill that it doesn't limit our ability, it doesn't give DMV or ODOT the ability to limit our access to those records, and we may have to give them up at the other end. The only solution I can think of is to put something in here that makes it clear that it doesn't, it's not intended to do that. And we'll struggle on with trying to keep it confidential at our end. Are there questions?
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, let's maybe back up and take this a little bit
sure.
more one step at a time. If I understand what you're saying, when you get this information from DMV right now, the court challenge was that you have to, it becomes public record?
Well, Chair Dahlin, Representative Burley, the Court of Appeals ruling said that people have a right to it. There may be a hurdle that they have to go over, but it may be public record. We've got a couple of more proceedings that we may have to go through before that's totally resolved. But that, the essence of what the Court of Appeals said is yes, that it may be a public record.
But does that ruling only apply to the information once you have it? And in other words, is it only narrow to the information because it's part of the jury selection pool? Or does the Court of Appeals ruling apply to if DMV has that information right now, does that make that a public record?
Chair Dahlin, Representative Burley, no, it just applies to the information in our hands.
Because you're using it for jury selection purposes?
For the jury selection purposes, that's correct.
Now, if this language is being proposed to be added, Mr. Chairman, if I may continue.
Certainly.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Burley.
On page 3, section 2.1a, where they're adding in that the resale or redisclosure of this can only be to a person or government agency that the Department of Transportation authorizes.
Mm-hmm.
If someone submits a public record request to the jury pool process, DOJ, whomever that is, under this language, wouldn't Department of Transportation have to approve whoever that is that's requesting for it?
Chair Dahlin, Representative Burley, that is certainly the issue, the question that is raised by that. And according to the Court of Appeals decision, we think it's likely that that can't be required because the people who are requesting it, it at least creates a strong legal ambiguity. We may have to just pony it up, yes.
And you referred to a section of ORS, and I missed that. Was it 8?
Oh, our the authority on another section, and this is part of the ambiguity about how ORS 802.179, which is amended by the bill, relates to ORS 10.215. which is the part of the authority for us to request DMV to provide master source lists that we can use to create jury lists.
So you're thinking that if we added language in here that specifically said information provided to Department of Justice for the purpose of jury selection is explicitly not part of the public record? Would that stand up to challenge?
Chair Dahlin, Representative Burley, we actually have specific language that says that now, that they are not, and it is in ORS 10.215, 215, and I'll read it to you. It says, except as specifically provided by law, the state court administrator and circuit courts may not disclose source lists obtained from private or public entities and jury source lists and jury lists containing names selected from a source list to any other person or public entity. However, the Court of Appeals decision said that notwithstanding the statute, and notwithstanding previous case rulings in Oregon that the Oregon Constitution allowed us to keep this information confidential, that there was a federal constitutional right under the First Amendment for people to have this information, which means that whatever statute you would pass, if the Court of Appeals decision stands, whatever decision that you passed, or legislation you might pass would still be subject to the U.S. Constitution. That's our concern. Not that the law was insufficient, because we fought to have those laws to make it clear, and the statute is very clear. It's the federal constitutional issue that creates an ongoing issue.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Are there any further questions? If not, we'll hear from the DMV and see if we can resolve this. And Robin Freeman from ODOT. I guess Bill Seeley's going to join you too.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robin Freeman. I'm with the Oregon Department of Transportation. With me today is Bill Seeley. Bill is our customer services manager. DMV worked with the sponsors of House Bill 3464 on the bill's content to strengthen the ability to control the disclosure of record information. The insurance industry approached the department to ask us to develop a service that would allow them to access DMV records online in real time. Driving records are already available to the industry, but with an overnight turnaround which no longer meets the needs of that industry. Most other states already provide an online service similar to what we intend to develop. But we have some experience that suggests the more available information is, the more likely it is to end up in the hands of those who are not qualified to receive it. We researched how we might amend the law to strengthen our oversight of the sale of DMV records, resulting in House Bill 3464. The department has researched instances of misuse of record information and found most of the concerns are a result of the information being made available via the Internet. In tracing the origin of the information, we've learned that the greatest risk is with information that has been resold multiple times. We found that in some cases, with each resale, adherence to the laws by both seller and buyer gets weaker. There needs to be a way to break the chain of resale when misuse occurs, which this bill is designed to give us. The bill gives the department the ability to authorize to whom DMV information is resold once a qualified business buys the information from the department. Once a qualified business buys the information, they are free to use it for purposes allowed under the law. This bill in no way affects their ability to do that. However, once a business has used the information, they are then free under the law to resell it to any other qualified business. This is where the department would exercise some authority to authorize the resale. This bill would have the seller require their customers to provide documentation to the department that shows they are legally entitled to the information. This would also be true for disseminators, which are businesses legally entitled to the information because their primary business activity is to disseminate information to others. We would implement a process similar to that which we plan to use for anyone reselling the information. However, with disseminators, we likely will only require that the disseminator have their customers' qualifications available for inspection by the department upon request. Through routine audits, we would inspect the documentation and take action where indicated. This bill gives the department the opportunity to not authorize a buyer if they aren't eligible to receive the information, and perhaps more importantly, to prevent further resales if we find the buyer has misused the information. when responding to a complaint or follow-up on an audit, the new authority will allow us to break the chain of resale exactly where it needs to be broken to prevent any further improper redisclosure and without interfering with the legal resale of DMV information. The bill also includes a provision to make the state immune from liability for any claim arising from the resale of information. This provision is included primarily to make sure that businesses do not lessen their efforts around verifying that a buyer is legally entitled to the information. Once the department takes any active role in authorizing a buyer, the risk exists that a business would rely wholly on the department's conclusion. This is not a desirable situation. The immunity clause will make it clear to resellers that the risk lies with them. We appreciate the committee's consideration of this bill. We believe it will strengthen the department's ability to oversee adherence of laws governing the disclosure of DMV records and information. And Bill and I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Questions? Representative Worthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Robin, given what the previous speaker said, what's your thoughts on that?
Chair Dallum, Representative Burley, I'm going to let Mr. Saley address that question, if that's appropriate for you.
I'm Mr. Chair, Representative Burley. I'm Bill Saley with the Department of Transportation. I can understand why Mr. Swank has raised that. In thinking it through, I don't think there is an issue there for two reasons. First, there's a difference between use of the information and redisclosure of it. The authority under which his office receives the information in 802.179, they are then free to use the information to carry out their government function. We don't have anything to interfere with that, and we don't intend to do anything to interfere with that. Redisclosure would occur when you're making the information available if the State Court Administrator's office set themselves up as an information warehouse. We could go get information. But if a consequence of preparing the jury lists is that that information then becomes public record in some other venue, that's permissible under the law, and it's not something we interfere with. This was a question when this set of laws was put on the books in 1997. That many government agencies had a question about, including law enforcement. Their questions were, what does that mean we're not free to broadcast over the airwaves the name and address of a suspect we're trying to track down? Is that redisclosure? Can we not do that any longer? If a name and address ends up on a court document, does that mean that we have to redact that from court documents that otherwise are public record? The answer is no. The Attorney General issued a formal opinion distinguishing between the two. So I believe in hearing what Mr. Swank described there, that would be something that was considered their use, would not be a redisclosure, and therefore wouldn't be subject to the authority that we're asking for in ORS 802.181 that would only govern redisclosure. The other reason is that it's the reason we're seeking this is, as Robin explained, the authority we would exercise is to ensure that the recipient is an authorized recipient under the law. We have no intention of being arbitrary in that decision. Any authority that we exercise under this bill, if it is passed, would be set down in administrative rule and would go through a public process describing what authority we are going to exercise and how we will exercise it. And it certainly wouldn't be our intention, and we would not interfere with the public process in that way to say, no, we are not going to provide records to the State Court Administrator's office anymore because of something that might happen to them later on. That really is a matter of public policy. That is something we would bring back to your body for a decision. We have no intent of doing anything like that to exercise authority in that way.
Follow up,
Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, I guess I'm not following the logic. I mean, if I can file a public records request with the court administrator to get the jury list or whatever this list is of all this stuff that they got from DMV, and if this appellate court decision stands, I would submit that all you're trying to do in this bill is now moot, because any disseminator, reseller, or anybody else, marketing firm, anybody that wants it, if the door's open over here with the jury list, I wouldn't even waste my time going to ODOT or DMV. I'd just go to the jury pool and get the information. So that, I mean, if that, you know, logic stands, why are we even debating this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, there is some logic to what you're talking about there. DMV information is available in from lots of sources, actually, but we're the original source, and it, people still come to us to get most of their information. It's the freshest and most accurate, as you know, we're recording what's going on in the state. But notwithstanding that, what we're seeking to do here, as long as anyone is coming to us for information and wants to resell it later, the authority we're seeking in 802.181 still gives us the opportunity to weigh in on whether that recipient is qualified under the law to receive it. What you're thinking about, I think, is happens more with government agencies. I mentioned the court example, where many of our records end up in court records, and they are just as public as any other court record would be, unless there are specific records regulating the courts. So with government, there's more of that risk. But with private business, which is where we've been having the difficulty that we've been able to uncover, there generally aren't you know, public record laws referring to those businesses that say that they have to provide it or not have to provide it. That's pretty much all listed here in Oregon law, if Oregon was the source of those DMV records, and with accompanying federal law that also governs what people can do with DMV records.
Follow-up, are you satisfied, Representative Britt?
Oh, I'm going to have to think for a minute on this one.
Representative Britt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Seeley, can you tell me how many times this information can be resold or re-disseminated once it's passed on to any qualified entity?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, there is no limit. Once someone has obtained the information under the law, they are free to resell it to another party as often as they want, provided that party is also qualified under the law to receive it.
So that, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, certainly.
That chain of custody then might be how long, typically?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I'm not sure that we know what a typical would be, but in the work that we've done to trace back because of some customer complaints and that type of thing, we're used to seeing two, three, four entities in the chain, sometimes more. But that gets exactly to the reason why we're looking for this additional authority, is because there is no limit to that chain, and through our experience, what we've found is that the farther you get away from the source, the less, interested the parties become in determining whether the next person they're selling it to is really qualified under the law. So there's a point there where that just seems to break down completely. And as we uncover those, we want the ability to tell the world essentially that buyer is not entitled to the information, and you're not free to sell it to them. And if you do, then you're putting your own ability to obtain records at risk.
Mr. Chairman?
Certainly, Representative.
I'm led to believe that the longer that chain of custody gets, potentially we have more and more weaker links. On page 4 of the bill, lines 13 and 14, the state excuses itself from any liability. And I find that very interesting, that we would be collecting very personal information, allowing it to be disseminated without limit to the number of times that it's resold or redistributed. And then we excuse ourselves as the state from any liability should some of this very personal information ever be divulged. Is that...
Is there a question in there?
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Thank you. Pardon me for interrupting.
Is that typical in the state for the state to be divulging that kind of information without liability?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, the state already has immunity from claims where the information has been misused. It's in a statute just after this, in 802.194, I believe. If your information, for example, Representative Witt, were misused by someone, even if they were eligible under the law to obtain it, but it was misused, or they weren't eligible under the law to obtain it and they did through false means, the action is something that you can take or that the district attorney can take, and the person who misused the information can be in both state and federal court sued civilly and prosecuted criminally for that. But because of the nature of how open the records still are, when this law was first put into place, we have that kind of general immunity, and that if we're doing our job correctly, but we're lied to, or someone uses the information improperly, then the state is not responsible for that. That doesn't speak to your question directly, but then how we get there is as we're looking at increasing our participation in this law, for the first time now, we'll be looking at some of the entities to say, can Party A now sell to Party B? And what our concern is that as soon as we do that, the Party A's of the world may start relying completely on the department's determination as to whether Party B is eligible to receive it or not. If that happens, then they'll stop doing any work themselves to ensure that Party B is eligible under the law to get it. That's not what we're after. We want the Party A's of the world to exercise their responsibilities and make sure that whoever they're redisclosing or reselling it to is eligible to receive it. So without that immunity in there, we're afraid that it would change the nature of how businesses do their work, and they would be relying solely on what we're doing, and that's not what we're after.
Mr. Chairman?
Follow up, certainly.
That leads me to the issue of disseminators. Could you describe for me what a disseminator is and does?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Witt. Disseminator is, I believe it's a term unique to Oregon. When the set of laws was passed in 1997, we had a number of interests at the table that were making sure that they were still eligible to receive DMV information at the time. And one company stepped forward who said, well, we're in the business of disseminating information to all of these same parties that you're authorizing to receive it in the law, attorneys, insurance companies, government, that type of thing. But we ourselves don't qualify to receive the information so that we can continue to conduct that business. Will you consider putting us into the bill as an authorized recipient of the information so that we can continue to provide this service? The committee at the time that was dealing with this, the legislative committee, thought that was a reasonable thing to do and wrote into the bill at that time the authority for a business that was in the business of disseminating information to others as a qualified recipient. Any of their recipients are still required to be authorized under the law to receive it. So obtaining the information from a disseminator in many ways is just like getting it directly from the department. The disseminator is obligated to ensure that every one of their clients or customers is entitled under the law and to go through due diligence of ensuring that. We have a contract with the disseminators. They are, in fact, a contractor of the department because of that, and they're held to a high standard for compliance with all of the laws. Otherwise, they lose their ability to obtain records.
Follow-up, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are there other agencies outside of DMV that utilize disseminators to disseminate this personal information?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, I don't know of any, but it's not an uncommon practice for government agencies to rely on a single source for information. It's not called disseminator because that was kind of a term that was uniquely coined when this law was being developed. Other states, for example, if I can use that as an example, I believe it's the state of New York, for example, doesn't want to be in the business of having to sell record information or disclose it. So they have a contract that they let once a year, once every 2 years, one bidder gets it, and they essentially turn their file over to that vendor and say, here, you're responsible for meeting all of the laws of the state and providing all of the information. You give us our money, and you can make a profit with it, and you're obligated to follow all of the laws, or you'll lose your contract. So in that sense, that's kind of like a super disseminator in that case. So we're familiar with some relationships like that in other states. I'm not sure that I'm familiar with any other Oregon government agency that uses a disseminator in the same way.
One last question, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly, Representative Witt.
Do you ever hear from the general public that they are surprised or displeased or shocked about this practice?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, yes. Much, much less than we used to. Prior to 1997, all of DMV records, with the exception of a few things like photo and that type of thing, were public record. Just no questions asked, walk into a DMV office, lay down a couple of dollars and walk out with the information. This was the first time that DMV records were constrained in some way from being, you know, just pure public records. And that's kind of continued. Prior to 1997, it was a very common complaint. People were shocked. As time went on, less people were shocked because they knew it was going on, but they still didn't like it. So this has effectively closed down an awful lot of that. You, for example, cannot walk into a DMV office now and say, I saw a car with license plate ABC123. I'd like to walk out with the owner's name and address, which you could do before. You can no longer do that. So that took care of a lot of the concern. The records are still quite available under the law to many businesses and government entities, so it still has quite a breadth of availability. So we do still have complaints from time to time, but having done this since about 1991, been involved with our records, I can tell you that it's substantially reduced.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I might ask a few questions myself. I guess, Robin, these would be to you. This piece of legislation augments the 1997 legislative package by breaking the chain of accessibility, and that's its primary function. Is that correct?
Chair Dallum, the primary function is to give us a tool, us being the department, to insert ourselves in the resale chain. So I think that is different than what you're describing, perhaps. But I will let my colleague correct me. But this allows us a tool that we don't currently have. Currently, we have an agreement with that first person that we sell information to, that obtains information from DMV. And as resale goes, there's company after company after company. And so if abuse or misuse takes place anywhere down the chain, at this time the department doesn't have a means of inserting ourselves to stop that. We can certainly contact them. We can tell them about our concerns. But our only real authority right now is with that first company that we dealt with.
And if I might pursue, the design of the legislation is to more appropriately control who has DMV information.
Chair Dahlin, yes, in some in most respects, I guess, that is true, so that we know that those are qualified buyers, that they are qualified to have that information according to statute.
Thank you. Then, with Mr. Swank's concerns, are you satisfied that your concerns have been addressed?
Chair Dahlin, members of the committee, one of the reasons for coming out, once again, my name is Brad Swank, Special Counsel for Government
Relations. For the record, yeah.
For the record, the Judicial Department. One of my reasons for coming over here was to make sure that it was that the discussion was included in the record, because it is an issue. We did include it in the record when the changes were made in 1997. I would probably be most comfortable with some language actually in the bill saying that it doesn't relate to the subsequent redisclosure limitation, doesn't relate to source lists provided to courts for jury purposes. It might be good enough. Like I say, when I started this, we see this as an area that is legally ambiguous right now. It might be enough to resolve the issue if it were made clearly part of the record on the floor. It always helps to have statutory language. It may be that the issue is resolved if the appellate court, if there is some further review or some further action on the appellate court case. I wanted to make you aware of it because of the significance and the potential that it had to bring the criminal side of the courts to a standstill if we ended up without this information. But having done that, I don't have a quick solution for it. I'm not sure. I'm not trying to slow down ODOT's bills because we have no problem with the policy decision about restricting further access, except in this one instance where we may have no control. So, not having answered your question, like a true lawyer, not having answered your question directly, I'm not trying to. It's a hard question because of the ambiguity. As I say, making it clear on the floor that there's no intent to limit this may be sufficient. Language, certainly a sentence in the bill just stating that it's not, that it doesn't have that effect would be clearer than we could address, and sort of excluding us on the redisclosure issue would be nice. I don't want to necessarily slow down ODOT's bill here because people are very concerned about the redisclosure of their information. It's a big issue. So does that help you at all with...
Yes, what I'm going to say to you is you're now on the record, and if on the floor we entered again in the record the statement that this is in no way designed to inhibit the Judicial Department and their use of the information, that would cover you for now. We would do that.
Okay. Chair,
yes.
Before he leaves, though, I guess I'm a little bit confused, Mr. Swank. You're suggesting that we include language that would specifically exclude the jury pool from the limitations on the resale redisclosure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because we have a separate statute that prohibits us from redisclosing it, and that's the statute that the Court of Appeals ruled on. And we would very much hope that sometime in the future that statute is reaffirmed, but we of course have no control over that. So that's why I was suggesting that if you just took us out, had language to take, make it clear that we were out of this, we would rely on our statute and fight that battle in front of the of whatever processes are available to us.
So the language would be something to the effect that, except for ORS 10.215.
Let's do this way. We'll hear from the insurance people, and then we'll put ODOT and yourself together and resolve this problem. I don't think the problem is irreconcilable. I think what we're trying to do is give ODOT some tools to control their own information and protect the judicial department from further suit on hiding their information. And I think we can do both of those, and we'll let you work something out. Probably will not go into work session today, but we will hear from the insurance. Would that satisfy you?
Absolutely, but while may I ask one more question?
Absolutely. Certainly, everybody.
Is there any reason why we don't go just one step further and just prohibit the resale and redisclosure and just have ODOT approve the primary transaction all the time?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, we can't do that because there is a federal law that controls DMV information, the availability of it. Under that federal law, which is the Driver Privacy Protection Act of 1994, authorized recipients have the opportunity to redisclose it or resell it in the same manner as we've adopted here in Oregon law. In this case, the federal law has supremacy. We can't adopt a law that would conflict with it. Okay. So we'd have to see that kind of change at the federal level first before we'd have the opportunity to do the same here.
Okay, thank you.
That was the first place we started. That's what we were looking to do, actually, sir.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? If not, we'll ask Paul Cosgrove to come to the stand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Paul Cosgrove representing Nationwide Insurance, and I'm the designated representative of a greater group of insurance companies that's been working with DMV on resolving this issue over the last year or two. First, I'd like to thank the Chair Dahlem for assisting us in providing a vehicle to bring this issue before the committee and for scheduling today's hearing. The insurance industry is one of the more significant, higher volume users of this kind of information, and we do it so that we can, in this day and age, provide the kind of customer service that our customers expect, which is if they call us or go on the internet and they need a quote for insurance, we have access to their driving record to be able to give them an accurate quote of what their insurance coverage would cost. We support the restrictions on the reuse of this information that are contained in the bill. We think that's appropriate to protect that information. I would just like to highlight, some of you may have already known what we're talking about in terms of specifically what's defined as personal information for DMV's purposes, but the information we're talking about protecting is the person's name, the address, telephone number, which sometimes DMV has, and their driver's license number. So we're talking about not information about their car, which has less restrictions on it, but in fact the information about the person. I would be happy to answer any questions. I do believe, as you've had a discussion on the concerns of the department, of the Judicial Department, I do believe that actually the easy answer to that may not require a new language in this bill. They obtain, as if I understood Mr. Swank correctly, this information from DMV not under the authority in ORS 802, but under the authority in ORS 10, and they continue to have that authority, and those uses and reuses of it are not restricted at all in this bill. It's only if they were asking for the information under this set of statutes would any of this apply to them and their use. So I think that issue, by clarifying the ambiguity here and on the floor, should solve that problem. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you very much. If not, we will close the public hearing. And with that, I believe that the business of the committee is completed. We will go into work session. on Thursday, and if you would schedule that.
How about reopening the public hearing? Carry over.
Oh. We'll reopen the public hearing until the administrator lets me close it.
And so if you carry over the what we had today.
We'll carry over the public hearing until Thursday. Thank
public
you.
Public hearing and possible work session.
Public hearing and possible work session. And now that we're parliamentarily correct, we will close the public hearing.
Okay. We have a 48-hour notice requirement. We missed it already. So you can't adjourn. You can carry over.
Carry over. Thank you.
As long as you're in what you said you were going to be.
Boy, I'm glad you're here.